creativity is kind of the last bastion of human mental ability that's different from machines.
Welcome to Talking Creativity, the Crania podcast from Dublin City University. I'm Ciarán Dunn.
I'm Giovinetti.
And I'm Tim Hannigan.
Welcome to another episode of Talking Creativity, the Crania podcast. Today we are here with Professor David Cropley. He's Professor of Engineering Innovation at the University of South Australia. His research interest focuses on creativity in school education, assessing organizational innovation capacity, and the nexus of creative problem solving and engineering. David is author and co-author of 8 books, including Femina Problematis Solvendis, Problem Solving Woman, A History of the Creativity of Women, Creativity in Engineering, and Novel Solutions to Complex Problems, and The Psychology of Innovation in Organizations. Now a recognized expert in creative problem solving and innovation, David was a scientific consultant and on-screen expert for the Australian ABC TV documentaries Redesign My Brain, Life at Nine, and Redesign My Brain Series 2. Dear David, thank you for being here with us today and taking the time to share your expertise and experience with us and our audience.
No problem, Joe. I'm absolutely delighted to be there. I just wish I could be visiting you in person, but this is obviously the next best thing. So,
indeed, we are making the best out of a tricky situation at the moment. Mm-hmm. To start with, I would actually like to get you know better. Could you tell us where your interest in creativity comes from?
Yep, it's maybe a slightly unusual story, but it almost began by accident about 25 years ago now. Of course, you mentioned I teach in an engineering school, but about 25 years ago, I just by chance got given the task of developing a new course for first-year students, which was focusing, amongst other things, on innovation. And so, of course, that got it also onto the topic of creativity. But the real reason why I became a creativity researcher is that when I was given the task of developing that course, I thought, well, I don't know about creativity, but I know somebody who does know something about creativity, and that's my father, Arthur Cropley, who is also a professor. He's a professor of psychology, and he has been a creativity researcher, in fact, since before I was born. So I went and talked to him, and really, to cut a long story short, it sort of developed from there that I got more interested in creativity, both in engineering, but also in general, in education and in organizations, for example. And the more I got involved in it, the more I thought, this is really interesting. I'd like to study this further. And sort of over time, I became as much a creativity researcher with a sort of psychological focus as I am an engineering professor. So it was basically almost by accident.
We'd like to take our guest a little bit off guard at the very beginning, and we always ask one question, and I would like to go ahead and ask this question to you. The question is, what single word do you associate with the concept of creativity?
Well, it's a very good question, and of course I immediately want to give you two words, but I'll explain that in a second. But the single word that I would associate with creativity more than anything else, I think, is novelty.
Can you please elaborate on that? Why novelty?
Well, novelty, of course, is the, to me, and I think to most creativity researchers, is the sort of essential ingredient of creativity. But as I said a moment ago, really, I'd like to give you two words. And the other word that is really equally important to novelty is effectiveness. But novelty, we can have, interesting ideas. We can develop solutions to problems. And of course, if we're solving problems, those solutions need to do what they're supposed to do. So they need to be effective. But if they don't have this essential ingredient of novelty, then we can't really call it creativity. It's something else. It's problem solving or, engineering. But unless there is novelty there, then we're not talking about creativity. So that's kind of why novelty is the single most important word in any discussion about creativity.
I see. And I also think it comes from your background. You are an engineer. I think you deal with solving and finding new effective solutions to problems as well.
Yeah, that's right. So, of course, as an engineer, I'm you know, equally focused on the idea of effectiveness of the problem-solving element. But even in other areas of creativity, I believe there's always an element of effectiveness or relevance, or you know, doing whatever it is that you're trying to do well and effectively. But there's always this, you know, the precondition for creativity on top of everything else is this idea of newness or novelty.
How do you see the relationship between creativity and different domains? Do you think there are different kind of creativity there, or is a general concept?
Again, a very good question. And I guess my position on this is, which I think is pretty common amongst creativity researchers, is that it's a bit of both. So we say in the field of creativity that there's domain-specific elements of creativity, and then there's domain general elements. And you know, we can pick that apart a little bit more. The things that I think are domain general, in other words, they're common across all kinds of creativity, are, for example, the way that we think when we're trying to be creative. So the cognitive aspect or divergent thinking that's associated with creativity. I believe that that's really no different whether you're a creative artist or a creative teacher or a creative engineer. The things that become more specific to the domain or specific to the discipline, in many ways, are what you'd expect. Like the domain knowledge that you need to be a creative engineer is knowledge about, you know, physics and mathematics and so on. And so that kind of naturally gives you an element of this problem-solving creative process that's specific to engineering. Or if you're an artist, you know, it's difficult to be an artist unless, you know, if you're a painter, you've got to know how to put the brush on the canvas, how to mix colors, and you know, how to paint correctly and technically. But you've also got to have this capacity for divergent thinking. So it's a bit of both in the sense that there are some things that are general to creativity, whatever the discipline or domain. And then there are, of course, things that are specific to the domain itself, art, music, teaching, medicine, engineering, and so on.
So you also see a relationship between creativity and knowledge. There cannot be creativity without knowledge.
Yes, I think that's very important. And what I like to say, for example, is, you know, that you'll never see a creative new design for a bridge, for example, done by a person who doesn't have some sort of domain knowledge of engineering. And it's the same, I mentioned art as well a moment ago, that you know, it's unusual to see genuine creativity in any field by somebody who doesn't already have, you know, the knowledge and the skills that are particular to that field.
We can see how creativity is increasingly identified as a key educational outcome in many countries now. Why is creativity considered important?
Well, my view of this is that, as you've already said, that creativity is becoming recognized as a key, you know, we hear phrases like it's a 21st century skill. And the essential reason for that comes back to the fact, as far as I'm concerned, that the real value of creativity is that it is an enabler of solving problems. And in the 21st century, as we move into this, an era where technology is becoming ever more sophisticated and so on, we also have to look at the things that we as humans can do that automation, artificial intelligence, and so on cannot do. And as AI and automation become more capable in this high technology era, and as those things can do more and more tasks that humans previously performed, we begin to see that things like creativity are one of the few things that kind of remains that really can't effectively be done by artificial intelligence or automation. So you know, when you put all of that together, the reason why creativity is this essential 21st century skill is that it's a uniquely human ability or a uniquely human skill. And that difference between what humans can do and what artificial intelligence can do is going to become more sharply defined in the future. So creativity, I like to say, you know, creativity is kind of the last bastion of human mental, you know, ability that's different from machines.
Creativity as a truly human faculty. And on this matter, do you believe everyone can be creative then? And can creativity be enhanced, fostered, even taught?
Yeah, it's a couple of important points there. I don't generally say that, you know, everybody can be creative, but let me sort of explain that a little bit further. Everybody has the ability to be creative to some degree, but like many human abilities and traits, I think creativity is kind of normally distributed in the population. So some people are more creative than others. And then tying that into your second point, that the consensus is very much that creativity can be taught. But when you put those two things together, I don't think it means that, you know, we can make everybody super creative. I think what happens when we teach people to be creative is that you shift this distribution kind of in a positive direction. But you're still going to have some people who are not very creative and some people who are super creative, and a lot in the middle. But effectively what you're doing when we teach creativity or when we embed it in education is that we're kind of shifting the mean to the right. So we're sort of increasing the overall average ability for creativity in the population, but it's still a distribution.
On the matter of teaching creativity, teaching for creativity, from your experience, what are the difficulties encountered by, well, in our case, higher education practitioners in implementing a teaching style that can foster creativity?
Again, a very interesting question to consider. And you mentioned the idea of teaching for creativity. I think it's important to acknowledge that, but also say that there's another aspect, and that is teaching with creativity. So, any academic or any school teacher has to consider both of those things, teaching for creativity, in other words, trying to help your students to be more creative, but also that teaching with creativity, to me, that means, you know, that you're also an exemplar of creativity yourself and that you're using creativity to help you be a better teacher. But whichever one of those you look at, there are some challenges and some difficulties. And if we take the example of higher education, I think one of those, certainly I find this in engineering, is that there's still a lot of resistance to things like creativity. And, you know, engineering as an academic discipline, I think, is pretty conservative in nature. And so we still have a kind of blockage to overcome, which is convincing, you know, the main body of engineering academics, and I suspect it's the same in a lot of disciplines in higher education, convincing them that creativity is this valuable 21st century ability, that we need to develop it in our students because they're going to need it in the future. So I think there's a lot of sort of institutional and disciplinary resistance, not just to creativity, in fact, but to other sort of so-called soft skills that we know are becoming more important, but are still seen as not as important as, you know, the traditional stuff like the factual knowledge in a discipline. So I'd say that the biggest hurdle, the biggest difficulty to overcome is a kind of disciplinary or institutional reluctance to embrace things like creativity and make them a more important part of the curriculum.
What do you think is the source of this resistance? Do you think it's a general fear for the unknown, or it's rooted elsewhere?
I think it's certainly a little bit, at least, of maybe not a fear of the unknown, but an unfamiliarity with an area like creativity. And again, if I take my own discipline as an example, which is maybe a more extreme example, that creativity, a lot of creativity is psychological in nature. And for engineering academics, that's a lot further from their comfort zone. So I think that there's this element of just not really being familiar with, you know, social, scientific, psychological concepts and how they relate to a discipline like engineering. That may not be as strong an issue in other disciplines that you know, that are closer to psychology or to the social sciences, but it's certainly an issue in engineering. So you're right, it is partly this reluctance, or you could say a fear of the unknown. It's also, you know, creativity seems to be an interesting discipline, that it's also something, or an interesting concept. It's something that I've seen pop up in a lot of disciplines from time to time, but every time, you know, there's some interest shown in it, people seem to go back to first principles and kind of, you know, instead of looking at the body of creativity knowledge and seeing, well, what do we already know, they try to go back and kind of reinvent the concept of creativity. That's probably partly tied to the fact of, you know, that a lot of disciplines think that creativity is some mystical quality. And so they think, well, nobody knows what creativity is. So they start by saying, well, I guess we'll have to define it ourselves. And that couldn't be further from the truth. So there's a lot of issues, fear of the unknown, but another important one is that there are several myths associated with creativity, and chief amongst those is the myth that nobody knows what creativity is, or that there is no definition of creativity. And those things are really holding back embedding creativity across disciplines in higher education.
How do you think we can overcome these difficulties, these obstacles that really hinder an effective implementation of creativity?
Well, I think part of the responsibility, of course, is on the discipline of creativity and creativity researchers to, you know, to really communicate their discipline to other people. But part is also that, you know, all disciplines across higher education, you know, as we move into this era of the, you know, 21st century world and the so-called future of work and so on, I think it's also a responsibility of all disciplines to be open and flexible to new ideas. And so for the disciplines themselves to be creative, basically, and say, what other things do we need to be teaching our students to make sure that our students will be successful in the future? And in fact, it's very interesting for me, because in Australia, I do quite a lot of work with secondary schools. And I would say that a lot of secondary schools are realizing that idea of, what do we need to be doing for our students to help them be successful? Their schools are recognizing that in some ways much better than universities. So I think another thing for, in terms of unpicking some of the blockages, is that I think universities have something to learn from the way that secondary and even primary schools are approaching this, you know, these 21st century skills and understanding the importance of them.
I agree. It looks like that lower education is in a way ahead of higher education in terms of implementing what you just called the 21st century skills, and creativity is one of those.
Yeah, I agree.
Moving the focus on the students then, what would you recommend to, let's say, first year university students who really want to learn or increase their creative potentials and outcomes?
Well, that's a tough question. I mean, it's a very good question, but quite a tough one. The reason it's tough is that, and this is the case, you know, for helping teachers or academics or tutors to understand how to teach for creativity, the reason it's a tough issue is that that creativity is a complicated thing. Now, I said a few moments ago that one of the things holding back creativity in higher education is that people say, oh, nobody knows what creativity is. But that's not what I mean. And the point I'm making is that creativity is complicated, but it's still well understood. So the tricky thing here is that when somebody asks me, what should I do to be more creative, that it's kind of hard to give a simple answer, because there are a number of different things that are important for creativity. And we talk about this idea of the four P's. In other words, process, person, product, and we use the term press to mean the pressure of the environment. So when I tell somebody things that they could do to be more creative, it's a matter of deciding, do I tell them something about the cognitive process, or do I tell them something about them as a person, in other words, attitudes and dispositions? Do I tell them something about what creative products look like, or do I tell them something about the environment? Now, I'm avoiding your question a little bit, so let me give you a more concrete answer. In the case of, say, a first-year student saying, you know, David, what should I do to help myself be more creative? Then I would say, well, we need to focus on the thing that you've got the most control over. And the thing you've got the most control over yourself is probably, you know, your own attitudes and dispositions, and probably closely followed by the cognitive skills of, you know, being able to think divergently. So a good starting point as a piece of advice for a first year student who wants to make themselves or help themselves to be more creative is to say, focus on attitudes and dispositions. And you can do that in very simple ways. For example, a very important personal trait or disposition that favors creativity is openness. So in other words, being open to new ideas and being, you know, tolerant of uncertainty or ambiguity. And the more you can, you know, just get used to experiencing different things, being flexible, trying different things, or, you know, even in a first year course, you know, if you go into in engineering, you know, we do a lot of laboratory classes. Instead of going into the laboratory or even into a lecture, waiting for the tutor or the lecturer to tell you what to do, you know, being more inquisitive and realizing that sometimes these situations are not spelled out in complete detail, but don't let that uncertainty put you off. So, you know, the simple advice is be open to new ideas, be flexible in the way you think about things, be tolerant of uncertainty, and those things naturally put you into a kind of frame of mind where it's easier to be creative. So the simple advice is focus on attitudes and dispositions that naturally favor creativity.
Do you think that the students, first year students at the university, do they face some kind of specific difficulties in trying, even when they're allowed to think creatively? They certainly need to shift from all the way they've been taught during the formal education into a way of taking risks and experimenting, openness. We said that lower education is quite ahead in terms of implementing these 21st century skills, but taking risks is still not a thing that is taught in school, really. Sometimes students are afraid of taking risks because their grades depend on that. So what do you think is the main difficulty then students can face in approaching creativity?
Yeah, I agree with how you've characterized, and it's a very good explanation that, as you said, despite what schools are doing and so on, we still have a problem in society in general, which is that success basically comes from avoiding risk and from, you know, coming up with the right answer. And these are all things that basically are the opposite of what you need to do to foster and develop creativity. So, you know, to give specific examples, the way we get good grades at school is that when the teacher says, what's 2 + 2? Instead of saying 22 or banana, we say 4. And the teacher says, good boy, David, 4 is the correct answer. Tick, you've passed that test, and so on and so on. So as children, we get used to the fact that the best way of doing things is to think convergently, you know, to find the right answer, to be risk averse, to be intolerant of uncertainty and inflexible, because that's how you get good grades, that gets you success, that gets you into university and so on. And then suddenly what often happens is maybe at university or even, you know, during your career, you start to encounter situations that actually require you to be creative. And the difficulty a lot of us face is that we've forgotten how to be creative. We've forgotten how to think divergently and take risks and tolerate uncertainty and so on. So a lot of the challenge we face, whether it's at school or in universities, as far as creativity is concerned, is kind of undoing these old habits. And for some people, the habits are so ingrained that it's difficult to unpick them, or it makes them very psychologically uncomfortable. And of course, you know, we, as human beings, we often, you know, we act to remove the discomfort. So it's basically one of the challenges of creativity in an area like higher education is undoing these old habits. And it's habits not just in the students, but, you know, lecturers have the same habits, and university courses are also largely set up to favor convergent thinking, so reproducing the correct answer. You know, we minimize uncertainty for students. I mentioned a moment ago about going into the laboratory class. You know, we give the students in engineering a piece of paper that tells them exactly what to do in that laboratory class that day, what numbers to write down, and then hand that into their tutor. So we remove every opportunity from the system for students to try and be creative, even if they want to be. So there's all these sorts of issues, but you said it exactly. We've all our lives, quite often leading up to university, we've become very good at thinking convergently and doing things that don't favor creativity. And we've got to find some way of sort of reversing that trend.
Just because you just mentioned grading and testing, a natural question is it possible to assess creativity? If so, how can it be done?
So my approach to this is it's similar to the four P's that I mentioned before. You know, if we want to be to really fully develop our creativity, we've got to think about the person, that's attitudes and dispositions. We've got to think about the environment, the cognitive processes, and also the product, the outcome of creativity. And so as far as assessing creativity is concerned, I believe we can take the same approach. So for example, a lot of creativity research does this. So if, you know, if you want to know how creative a person is, we can measure their ability to think divergently. There are tests of your ability to generate lots of ideas, and there are ways of scoring that, and there are norms and standards and so on. So we can use that to help us understand if a person's creative. However, the best way of all is to ask a person to do something that requires them to be creative, and then look at the thing they've done, the product or the outcome. And you know, right at the beginning of the discussion, we talked about novelty and effectiveness. So you know, we've even got ways of looking at an artifact that a student develops, or an essay, or you know, a tangible product, and we can assess whether that thing itself is creative. Or we can assess the person and their thinking or their attitudes and disposition. So whichever aspect of creativity we're talking about, person, product, process, and so-called press, there are ways of assessing each one of those. And sometimes it's a matter of assessing all of them to get a nice sort of diverse picture of the person's creativity, ranging from, you know, how they're thinking about creativity, and their attitudes and dispositions, and right through to what they actually do and produce.
Do you think that measuring creativity, assessing creativity, giving a grade to creativity is necessary altogether?
Well, I do. There's nothing like, you know, at the end of the day, in education, we're used to the fact that, you know, the best way we've developed so far to understand if somebody has learned something is that we've got to have some kind of assessment. I don't mean, you know, just a written test or anything, but, you know, we have sort of competency kind of based assessment and so on. But at the end of the day, we've got to have some way in an educational system of kind of verifying that the desired objectives have been achieved. And I think it's the same with creativity. Another important related question is whether that kind of assessment is purely summative. So if we just do it at the end of a course and say, yes, you were creative, well done, or whether we use it in a more formative sense to give feedback, to help people develop further. And I think both of those are important. But as far as creativity is concerned, I think maybe it's particularly important to take a kind of formative assessment approach. Whether we're assessing the creativity of a product, or we're assessing the attitudes or the thinking processes of an individual, we know that good feedback is essential to good learning, and creativity is the same. If we want people to develop this capacity to be creative, we've got to help them by telling them when they're doing the right thing or telling them when they're doing the wrong thing and helping to sort of steer them back onto the path of the thing that we're trying to achieve. So I think assessment is both necessary and important, but certainly for creativity, formative assessment coupled with, you know, giving good feedback and with tutors, lecturers, understanding these different facets of creativity so that they can do these assessments, but then feed that back to the student in a meaningful way that helps the student actually then improve their creativity.
I think you made very clear the difference between giving a grade and providing feedback. And I think this distinction is essential, especially when it comes to creativity.
Yeah. Especially, you know, if we're talking about like not just a body of knowledge, but, you know, creativity, as we've already said, by its nature is sort of a skill. So, you know, it seems like, you know, the only way you can really do that effectively is in a much more interactive, you know, formative process.
As educational practitioners, do you think that the dark side of creativity, malevolent creativity, should be a concern?
Yeah, it's, again, I mean, you're asking great questions and they're very thought-provoking. I mean, I've thought a lot about malevolent creativity, of course, because, you know, I coined the term back in about 2005. Now, that doesn't mean that people hadn't already thought about negative aspects of creativity, but we developed this term malevolent creativity specifically to bring in the idea that it's possible to be deliberately sort of destructively creative. So malevolent creativity helped us to, you know, to understand better, say, criminals who are using creativity deliberately to do bad things, like to be creative in how they rob a bank or do things like that. And of course, as you said, that brings up ethical questions. One of the big challenges of this is, and it's the same in some other areas, that you know, a natural response might be to say, well, God, if criminals can be creative, then we'd better not teach people how to be creative because we could be helping criminals to be better criminals. And of course, that's a very, I can't think of the right word, but a very sort of, you know, unpromising approach to take because, you know, you throw the baby out with the bathwater. So I think, you know, as far as these ethical issues are concerned, there's no doubt that, you know, we have to teach people to be creative because it's such a vital ability, especially moving forward into the 21st century. It's what we are going to do that's going to create jobs and give people meaningful work in an era that's increasingly seeing AI and so on. But like a lot of things, there is always the potential for a dark side to this. And I think maybe at this stage, the best answer of how to balance these things is that we need to understand better exactly how malevolent creativity operates, because maybe it's possible that we can find a happy balance where, you know, teaching creativity to people is not the problem. It's teaching creativity to psychopaths. That might be the problem. So we need to be careful not to fall into the trap of saying that because some people use creativity for nefarious purposes, therefore creativity shouldn't be taught. It's more complex than that, more nuanced than that. But until we understand, you know, how these different elements come together of creativity, malevolent intent, maybe abnormal personalities and so on, until we really understand the relationships there, it would be too simplistic to just sort of reject creativity. We need to understand it better.
I absolutely agree. I agree with you saying that creativity is dangerous, like saying that a fork is dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
With a fork, I can have my spaghetti or I can actually kill someone.
Yeah, exactly.
The problem is not in the fork.
Yeah.
The risk of ethical problem coming from many different things we learn and we teach, it's everywhere. And I think it's also partially due to the fact that education is now very, very specialized. It's sort of very fragmented in skills that you need to learn and then you put together, while perhaps having a broader, like you mentioned soft skills before, those are part of the educational path, but they're not really addressed properly during the educational path. A student at the end of formal education has acquired a certain set of skills and they have to put them together. And what is somehow missing is actually the man from the Renaissance, someone that, yes, is an expert, but knows a bit of everything and is well-rounded and organically developed.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think, that's really, is part of, I think, what we're trying to say about creativity is because it's not just creativity, but it's emotional intelligence and good communication skills. And I like the way you've expressed that. That's sort of a reflection of trying to create the sort of Renaissance man or the Renaissance woman in the future. Is everybody needs to be, or in the future it will be the case that people need to be more sort of multi-talented, or they need to be good generalists moving into the future.
I'm glad you mentioned the creative woman.
Yeah.
I actually have here on my desk Femina Problematis Solvendis. Do you find any relationship between creativity and gender?
Again, another interesting, it's these are not just good questions, Joe, but it's also a really searching examination for me. I feel like I'm defending my PhD or something. So, but that's good. It's nice to have some challenging questions. There's a couple of answers, I guess, to that. There is, in my own review of literature and so on, that there are some sex-based differences with regard to creativity. So, there are certain things that men do and certain things that women do that both of which kind of intersect with creativity. But, to put it in kind of simplistic terms, the things that men as a group, of course, and I'm talking only sort of in averages, but there are certain things that men do as a group that tend to favor some aspects of creativity. And there are certain things that women do as a group on the average that also tend to favor creativity. So what's interesting is that both males and females have kind of, certain, stereotypical characteristics that are good for creativity. And I think the real secret is, if you were running a company and you need your staff to be highly creative, it's worth understanding that there may be some parts of the creative process that are particularly well suited to women and some that are particularly well suited to men. And I think that's a good thing, that it's the same as if you had some people in your company who are particularly good mathematicians, then it would make sense to use them to do mathematical tasks because you're drawing on their strengths. And if you had other people in your organization who are, say, very good communicators, then it makes sense that you would use them to do communication tasks. So, and I think it's the same with creativity and males and females, that once we understand better, what these particular strengths are, then we can play to those strengths and use that to our advantage. And I know that there's more and more research emerging. And this is maybe the most important point, that, of course, that historically, probably with regard to creativity and innovation, we haven't made the best use of the skills that women bring to this process. But I think there's a growing recognition of the particular strengths that women bring to the process of creativity and innovation, and organizations are starting to recognize that and make better use of that.
Do you think we are still biased towards seeing creativity as a male attribute?
Yeah, I think you're right that part of the problem is that creativity, for whatever reason, has certain sort of connotations that probably have male overtones historically, and part of the challenge we face is it's the same for a lot of these sort of gender-based issues nowadays, that part of the task is unpicking the old way of thinking and then sort of building in the new. One of the things, it's funny, I mean, the book, the Femina book that you mentioned, I'm an example of exactly the same sort of stereotype thinking. The predecessor to that book was one that I called Homo Problematis Solvendis. And what I wanted to do when I wrote that book was just look at lots of examples of creative inventions throughout history. And I thought, wouldn't it be a fun way to sort of challenge our you know, the idea of Homo sapiens by saying, what if the scientific classification of species treated humans not as wise man, but as problem-solving man? In other words, what if, as humans, our defining characteristic was our ability to solve problems? So I began just by, you know, and said, well, we use the scientific notation Homo sapiens. So what's the equivalent for creativity? It's Homo problematus solvendus. And after I'd finished the book, a friend of mine got, you know, a bit offended, and I can see now with good reason. She said to me, you know, you realize that entire book, it's not only the title implies that it's men, but every single example in that book is an invention by a man. And, you know, I honestly had not realized that until she pointed it out. So like I say, I'm part of the problem as well, but it did make me realize, and I thought, you know what, you're right. And look at me. I mean, I'm guilty of exactly the same thing. So I thought, the only, you know, I can't complain. What she said was true. It's the only remedy for that is to say, well, then the obligation is on me to write another book focusing exclusively on creative inventions by females, not just to sort of correct my own bias, but also because I thought, well, you know what, actually this is an area that needs to be uplifted and explored in more detail. So I kind of, you know, I found it a really, you know, exciting and refreshing experience, both to sort of catch myself and my own inbuilt biases. But then when I sort of opened my eyes, I realized, you know what, that this is part of the problem that we face, that, you know, there are these biases and these assumptions and so on. And so, you know, it's an opportunity to correct it, but that definitely, like a lot of things, you know, creativity still suffers from some of these stereotypes. But, you know, I think there are things that we can order. I think for male creativity researchers like myself, you know, there are some things we can do to sort of raise the importance and the profile of our female colleagues and of the role that women have played in creativity, innovation, and inventiveness over many centuries.
Thank you, David. Most unfortunately, we are approaching the end of our conversation, and this is the time before the final question where I ask you if there is any remark, any message you want to send out to those who are interested in creativity.
Well, there is, and I guess there's lots of things. I could talk for another hour with you, Joe, but I guess, you know, a good message would be to say that you know, anybody who is interested in creativity amongst your audience, you know, who's working in a university setting and so on, to sort of take heart from the fact that creativity is absolutely a vital ability for people across all sorts of disciplines moving into the future for reasons I've said. But, you know, I'd encourage all of your listeners to, you know, if you're interested in it, you know, it's a good area to support. It's a growth area. And the more people that do that, the more we'll begin to see, you know, university programs, for example, giving more importance, not just to creativity, but to other soft skills as well, to create these Renaissance women and Renaissance men that we talked about a few minutes ago. So I guess maybe it's a very general message of, if you've got any interest in creativity in higher education, stick with it. And you know, it's a good area that needs more attention and more support.
And on that final question, I'm going to make you a wizard. So the question is, if you had a magic wand, what would you change to increase creative outcomes?
In education, I think, you know, if we stick to sort of higher education as you know, a particular focus, if I could wave my magic wand, I think maybe it would be to you know, reserve a significant proportion of every degree to really focus on creativity. And if I can take a moment to explain, one of the problems I've had over the years with my colleagues in engineering is it's not that they say, you know, creativity is unimportant. What they say is, yeah, we get it. Creativity is important. you can put as much of it as you like in our degree, as long as you don't take out anything else. And that's a polite way of saying we don't want it. So if I could wave my magic wand, it would be to genuinely reserve in the curriculum, you know, 20% of the curriculum to be, you know, available to developing this creative problem-solving capacity, because I think, you know, it's that important, and to make genuine room for creativity and creative problem-solving in the curriculum.
Thank you very much, David, for being with us today. It has been incredibly interesting. All the best.
Thank you, Joe. I've really enjoyed it, and I wish your listeners all the best.
This was another episode of Talking Creativity, the Crinia podcast.
In this series, we talk to academic experts on creativity, creative practitioners, people from the creative industries and the arts, and those working across disciplines and at the boundaries between scholarship and practice.
The aim of these conversations is to dig into creativity, to figure out what it means, and above all, to explore ways to encourage it in any field or discipline.
The Cranier Project is based at Dublin City University and is funded by the National Forum for the Enhancement of Teaching and Learning in Higher Education.